Hi, it's Jamie, Progressive number one, number two employee. Leave a message at the... Hey, Jamie, it's me, Jamie. This is your daily pep talk. I know it's been rough going ever since people found out about your a cappella group, Mad Harmony, but you will bounce back. I mean, you're the guy always helping people find coverage options with the Name Your Price tool. It should be you giving me the pep talk. Now get out there, hit that high note, and take Mad Harmony all the way to nationals this year! Sorry, it's pitchy.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
All right, let's do this. Welcome to Locked On Heat, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. My name is Wes Goldberg. I'm here as always with David Ramil. The Heat set a franchise record with 21 three-pointers in their 112-99 win against the Hornets tonight. We talked about how this was a must-win game, David, and the Heat found a good time to snap out of their shooting slump.
Yeah, obviously this was a crucial game as Miami continues their playoff push. Charlotte hot on their heels a couple games back of the Heat at the start of the night, but having won seven of their last 10 games, clearly looking to get a win at home, but on the second night of a back-to-back, they just didn't have the energy to contend with the hot-shooting Miami Heat as the second half moved on.
I mean, 21 three-pointers is just incredible. When you compare that to Charlotte, who made just 8 of 25, really down the stretch, the Hornets had no chance. You're just not going to compete with that. Tim Reynolds of the Associated Press tweeted out that of all the teams in NBA history to make 21 or more three-pointers in a game, no team has ever lost. And I think he said it was like 28-0 or something like that in that range. So that's a pretty foolproof way to win a game. Miami hadn't been shooting very well. We know this because they've dropped, what was it, five of their last eight before coming into tonight, which put them in this hole, kind of just barely hanging on to the eighth seed. Actually, going into this game, Indiana had the eighth seed over them because they had played one more game and they had one more win on their record. But now Miami, with this win, they take the eighth seed with a tiebreaker over the Pacers, and they stay on track to get that last playoff spot. But to talk a little bit more about the game, look, it was close in the first half. They outscore the Hornets 34-22 in the third quarter. I think maybe something with the Hornets playing on the second night of a back-to-back, tired legs kind of got the best of them in the second half, it looked like.
Sure.
But you can't take credit away from Miami, who just, number one, was just shooting the lights out. And yeah. And they got up for this game. I mean, they really did.
Yeah, it was an interesting night. We found out halfway through the afternoon that our favorite power forward, Luke Babbitt, would be missing tonight's game. Is it a hip contusion? I think that was the official diagnosis, right? So a sore hip. And he was out of the lineup. And then a lineup that we had discussed might be available to Eric Spoelstra during the playoffs, and that was the insertion of James Johnson as a starter. We've talked on a number of occasions that the combination of Johnson obviously plays so well off the bench. They have a good chemistry going. And even though James Johnson has been struggling of late, Spoelstra decided to go with him over perhaps Okoro White. I think he was the only other viable option to start at power forward, but he goes with James Johnson. He comes in huge, has a very, very big night there. And it was just an impressive victory, I think, for Miami. Obviously they had a sense of urgency there, and you could see in the way they were playing, they were doing things differently tonight than they have all season. They even engage in a full court press there. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you noticed that. And I think that was a very smart, sound strategy from Eric Spoelstra, especially putting pressure on Charlotte, knowing that they were fatigued on the second night of a back-to-back set. That's going to increase their overall exhaustion and force them to kind of outwork them a little bit. And it clearly showed as they started to fall apart in the third quarter. In the second half, but particularly in the third quarter. That first half, despite Miami's hot shooting, a Marvin Williams three-pointer at the buzzer from three-quarters the length of the court actually gave Charlotte the heat despite Miami's hot shooting. So that was they still had a very good chance. They were playing very tough. They had some good contributions from guys like Kemba Walker, obviously, who's overall productive. Nick Batum was getting to the line, and he had, I think, a game-high 26 points for Charlotte. And, they were just – I'm sorry, 24 points. But overall, Miami was just deeper, better, and much more efficient, especially defensively and from three-point range.
I want to go back to that thing you talked about, the full court press. I noticed that, right? And that just that's great coaching by Eric Spoelstra to really understand where the advantage lies for your team, not just personnel-wise, right? It's easy to be like, well, Hassan Whiteside's taller than anybody the Hornets have.
Sure.
Let's get him the ball. Or Goran Dragic might be able to take Kemba Walker off the dribble. Let's make sure we get him the ball on offense. That's one way to do things. But to really understand context and to take advantage of context and to coach to that where they're coming off the second night of a back-to-back, and Miami hasn't played since Sunday. So playing a full-court press was a brilliant coaching decision by Spoelstra. There was that. There's a few other things that Spo did. And we talked about this really being, in the last podcast we did, we described this five-game stretch, and this was going to be the first of the final five games of the season, as basically the first round of the playoffs for Miami. And Spoelstra really coached this like it was a playoff game. You know, Roddy Magruder started, for example, on Nick Batum, but Batum's length got the better of Magruder. We saw Josh Richardson against Batum a lot more in the second half. We saw a bunch of different lineups in the second half. I mean, he made halftime adjustments, real halftime, like playoff-type adjustments. We saw small ball lineups where O'Carroll White and James Johnson were Miami's bigs in the second half, even when Frank Kaminsky and Cody Zeller were on the floor for the Hornets, because Willie Reed just had an off night. He had a tough first half. He wasn't fast enough. He wasn't protecting the rim against anybody. Mm-hmm. So he basically yanks him in the second half for the most part and goes small. There was some switching going on defense. There was a number of times where Josh Richardson was on Frank Kaminsky in the post, and he just did, and Richardson, who's done a really good job anytime he gets mismatched like this, done a really good job fronting those guys and just getting his long limbs in front of them and just kind of waving his arms around like a maniac, which is his strategy, and it works great because no point guard wants to try to get that pass into the post where Richardson's just waving his arms like crazy all over the place. And so we saw some switching, some full court press, small ball units, just a really good coaching game by Spoelstra over Steve Clifford, who's not, you know, a schlump as far as coaching goes.
Yeah, you know, unfortunately, I was watching the Charlotte Hornets broadcast.
Unfortunately, they have a wonderful broadcast. You know, I was watching the same thing. I was watching the same broadcast you were. The Hornets have a great broadcast.
I'm not a big fan of Del Curry and Stephanie Reedy, I'll be honest with you.
Really?
Yeah, I'm not feeling the chemistry there. They're okay. Maybe not among the league's worst. But I'm not feeling it too much. But they did make a good point of highlighting the fact that this Hornets team has given up more three-pointers than any other team in franchise history. And sure, you could understand that in context of, you know, teams are shooting more three-pointers, but I think they are also giving up a large number of three-pointers on a per-game basis. So that obviously is going to total anything more than in previous years. But they don't have the same kind of defense Miami does. They pointed it out in the broadcast, as you know, that Miami obviously runs guys off the three-point line, but you know, they just don't have the defense in Charlotte to do that. Kemba Walker in particular isn't a very stout defender. He gives up a number of plays, and you could see that in the way he was guarding Goran Dragic early on. He got off to a really hot start. I think had 12 points midway through the first quarter, and then that's when Spoelstra he surprisingly pulled him out of the lineup to insert Tyler Johnson in there to play in the backcourt alongside Richardson. And I think that's when they began that half-court press to really get to Charlotte's exhaustion levels early on.
Yeah, and Miami's defense was spot on tonight. I mean, look, Charlotte ended up scoring 99 points, and they ended up making 45% of their field goals. But they got a lot of points in the paint in the first half, and in that second half, they really slowed them down. So the second half defense was really good. But one thing that they didn't allow, right, when you look beyond just the field goal percentages and the points on the board, is what they were allowing in these last few games, which is that random player just squeaking out for a big game. They didn't allow that. Nick Batum had 24 points. That's fine. Nick Batum can have 24 points. He's paid to get 24 points. But they were able to hold Kemba Walker to 18 points on 6 of 17 shooting. Outside of that, there was really nothing crazy. Kaminsky had 13 points, big whoop. Marvin Williams had 15 points, big deal. That was a mismatch every point in the game. Marvin Williams was basically going to be a mismatch because James Johnson, I don't know if he's as tall as Marvin Williams, and Marvin Williams had a nice night. He made 3 of 6 three-pointers, but 15 points isn't a whole lot. Nobody just went off, right? No random player just went off. There was no Emmanuel Mudiay tonight. There was no Courtney Lee tonight. It was just they were able to keep everybody on the Hornets to their roles and to keep them, a bunch of these guys like Kemba Walker, a little bit less efficient than they have been. So I thought Miami's defense played pretty well despite giving up 99 points. Let's talk about James Johnson more, but before we do that, Locked On Heat is looking to partner with great local companies to help you engage the passionate audience you're looking to reach. According to a recent study, podcast listeners are 65% more likely to engage with a sponsor than from traditional media. Plus, our rates are reasonable and based on the number of listeners. So you get your bang for your buck, guaranteed. Email us at lockedonheat@gmail.com to find out more about sponsoring Locked On Heat, engaging the audience that you want to reach.
Today's show is sponsored by Talkspace, the online therapy company. For a fraction of the price of traditional therapy, you can pick an experienced, licensed therapist you relate to and feel comfortable with. Each and every therapist has at least a master's degree and has completed over 3,000 hours of supervised work. To match with your perfect therapist, go to Talkspace.com/boom. And to show your support for this podcast, use code BOOM to get $30 off your first month. That's BOOM, Talkspace.com/boom, B-O-O-M.
So James Johnson, you talked about earlier how he got the start over Luke Babbitt. What a game for him, man. 26 points on 12 shots. Yeah. He made 6 of his 7 three-pointers, 4 rebounds, 3 assists, 2 steals in 32 minutes. Obviously, he had a great game. And he just basically did all the things that James Johnson does, but was really efficient about it. My question to you is, should the Heat keep starting James Johnson at power forward, even when Babbitt comes back?
I mean, we did talk about this being the potential lineup for the playoffs. If we contend that Miami is currently in a playoff type atmosphere, I don't see why they shouldn't. I mean, I think, maybe Spoelstra wanted to save that in his back pocket, kind of frighten teams a little bit in a different kind of matchup scenario there. But I think the reality is that Johnson is a much better player than Babbitt, provides Miami with a lot more versatility at the power forward position, much better defense, and is on a night like tonight, obviously as good a floor spacer. So somebody you have to contend with. I'm inclined to think that this is the starting lineup moving forward. I don't know how long Babbitt is going to be out. I imagine it'll probably be out for the next game as well, but I don't know that it makes much of a difference. I mean, I don't know that you necessarily have to go as deeper into your bench. Spoelstra tightens up his rotation as he enters the playoffs. He's likely to just keep Babbitt out of the lineup. So from starting the last 70-some games to potentially not playing at all, it seems likely that Babbitt might be done with Miami. I think he'll just keep with his lineup, to be honest with you. They look so much better, and Johnson just seemed more engaged. It certainly gives him an opportunity to continue upping his stock as he enters free agency. Maybe that's on the back of his mind. He had some comments today that he's not worried about free agency. He's not looking ahead to that. He's just worried about the guys in the locker room. But regardless, a performance like tonight certainly makes him a much more appealing free agent option. And if he continues to start and play at such a high level, I think it's best for him and for the team.
Yeah, the gripe against starting James Johnson is that backup unit of James Johnson and Tyler Johnson has been so effective, right? And you don't want to break them up. And, the reason you and I have talked about putting James Johnson in the starting unit has a lot to do with not having Dion Waiters. Because without Dion Waiters, there is no guy who can slash and kick and create for others to the degree that Goran Dragic and Waiters can in that starting unit. Having James Johnson in there to begin the game was really beneficial. And I know a lot of times we kind of just overlook who's starting. It's more about who ends games, and a lot of times James Johnson is in there to end games. But the starting unit, the way that you're able to kick, to start off a game, to set a tone, is really important. And I think that having James Johnson's aggression and just overall ability to create for himself and for others is so important, especially when Waiters is out, that I'm inclined to go with you. I think that that's the way to go here. And obviously, you do worry about not having two ball handlers and shot creators in that bench unit. And maybe that worked better tonight because Charlotte's bench unit has been so bad. It's been among the league worst this season. So you don't necessarily need James Johnson on the bench. Like Tyler Johnson coming off the bench is like enough to beat Charlotte's bench. It's very possible that was the case tonight. But
that substitution pattern that I pointed out earlier with Dragic, it's something that we could see in the playoffs as well. Look, let's assume that they make the playoffs and Spoelstra has the luxury of making these kinds of decisions. you know, even if Waiters does come back, as we assume that he will for the playoffs, you could start him alongside Dragic, then kind of take them both off the court at the same time, insert Tyler Johnson and Josh Richardson so they can have that kind of, you know, a ball handler, length, defense capability there. And then when you sub out James Johnson, you bring Goran and Deion back in there, and all of a sudden you reinsert capable ball handlers. There's enough options there, I think, that makes Miami dangerous and deeper than we had expected at the start of the season.
Yeah, that's exactly the point, right, is that, you know, that gripe that you don't want to break up that second unit is a very binary way of looking at things. Because that's, like, you don't just, unless you're Kentucky with Anthony, or when they had Karl Anthony Towns, you don't just take your five starters, put them on the bench, and put your five bench guys in. Like, right. They're like that weird, you know, thing that they were doing. But you don't do that if in the NBA. You know what I mean? Like, I'm pretty sure almost every minute of the game tonight, There was two of Dragic, Tyler Johnson, and James Johnson. There was two of those three guys on the court at all times, basically. Mm-hmm. Because you could do that by staggering the lineups with your substitution patterns that you were just talking about. So I have no problem with James Johnson. It almost reminds me of when David Lee was starting at power forward for the Warriors. And everybody's like, well, you can't bring Draymond Green in as a starter. You have to bring him in off the bench. You like his energy. You like what he could do as far as creating for the guys on the bench and all that stuff. And eventually, Steve Kerr came in and was just like, screw that. He's our better player. He's starting. We'll figure it out later. And that's basically what happened. And now you've got, you know, that small ball unit that works for the Warriors, their death lineup, that gets born and everything like that. James Johnson starts tonight. We get a lot more small ball stuff with James Johnson and O'Kara White at center.
Yeah.
I think you're right. I think this is going to be the playoff group. I don't know if Babbitt cracks the top eight or nine guys. And maybe he does, but he doesn't necessarily have to if James Johnson is giving you 32 good minutes a night and O'Kara White can play power forward and center for 17 minutes a game. Maybe Willie Reed's 15 minutes a game that he's going to give you are going to be a little bit better than what they were tonight. Mm. And that's all you really need, right? Because you got Whiteside there for 30 to 35 minutes a game.
Yeah, I mean, I would... I'm inclined to think that O'Kara would probably get more minutes over Babbitt moving forward, especially if he continues with Johnson in the lineup. I think
it was like right in line with like just weird random rotation wrinkles that Eric Spoelstra just like deploys. Is that why like O'Kara White's been out of the rotation so long? Is he's just been resting O'Kara White? Is this some like master plan by Spoelstra? Because I'm with you. I think you might be right because of O'Kara White's versatility. And he made a couple three-pointers tonight.
Just one, actually. Yeah. But I mean, he took a couple. Yeah. But I mean, he spaced the floor. Mm-hmm. You know, he did his best. I saw at one particular play, Kaminsky called for the ball and was, you know, he took Okoro in the low post and he actually got a score and one over him. But you know, it depends on matchups. I mean, Okoro, as long as he is, Kaminsky is a true 7-footer and 250 pounds or so, and certainly has the experience to back down a guy like O'Kara, as earnest a defender as he is. But, you know, it depends. I think maybe we'll see different lineup changes. We saw, you know, Babbitt be able to harass DeMarcus Cousins when they played New Orleans a couple weeks ago. I mean, there's options there, and I think that's just something that we hadn't considered. You know, I mean, the team's evolution, you can't underscore enough how much – you can't overstate enough – how they've grown over the course of the season, because this was a team that was, you know, didn't look particularly good. We questioned their depth. We questioned the talent levels. I mean, whether or not anybody was going to be able to find any way of contributing whatsoever. And all of a sudden, now you're looking at this lineup and saying, wow, who do I take out? Everybody's able to contribute something of value. And I guess Luke Babbitt, as we've contended for most of the season, offers very little other than the occasional floor spacing that he brings.
Talk a little bit about Hassan Whiteside, because he had an interesting game. It was really a tale of two halves for him. In the first half, he was completely outmatched, and he just looked like it was one of those games where he just wasn't bringing the energy, just didn't seem engaged. He got beat on a number of plays at the rim. I thought Charlotte really outscored Miami in the paint in that first half, and that's why they were in the game, despite Miami basically shooting the lights out from the tip, from three-point range.
He did pick up three early fouls, so I think that kind of took him out of his rhythm a little bit. And as you and I talked about yesterday,
I think was why he kept being behind the play, which I think is why those fouls kept happening.
Yeah, well, one of them, the I think the second one there where he got called, I can't recall exactly what the foul call was, where he starts jawing at the ref, and then you see Spoelstra kind of wave at UD to tell him, hey, calm him down because he was starting to get a little testy there. And I thought he was going to pick up a technical. Luckily, the ref didn't hear it. But there was no contact there. It seemed really incidental. And all of a sudden, Kemba Walker threw his head back or something like that. And it really was. Did you see that foul he drew on the three-point line? Yeah. I can't recall. Was it Magruder or Ellington?
This is our issue with Walker in the playoffs last year, him and Lynn. We were tearing our hair out because of these calls. Yeah. If it's on the Hornets' floor, man, the refs are going to call it. I don't know what it is with Charlotte and the refs that they're getting. But
Whiteside was pulling down a number of rebounds. Mm-hmm. I think he had like 10 first-half rebounds, mm-hmm. but he wasn't very active as a scorer. I think he took like maybe, two, three shots in the first half.
And defensively, he wasn't good. Defensively, he just wasn't good. There was a couple plays where, look, we know that Whiteside needs to come out and play the pick and roll a little bit more aggressively, but Kemba Walker's just so fast that there was a couple times where Whiteside comes out just a little bit and Walker basically baited him. He knew exactly that Whiteside would just come out a little bit and then just dashed right around him. And then Whiteside's caught, from the outside looking in and Walker's getting to the rim or hitting guys for the back door. And it was just, it was a mess. Spoelstra brought in Willie Reed.
Yeah, that didn't help.
And so when we talked earlier about those adjustments Spoelstra made, look, that could have caused a major mismatch and a major concern for the Heat in this game, but Spoelstra and his coaching was able to, and James Johnson's great play, and O'Kara White giving 15 really solid minutes in this game, that really helped sort of erase the concern, and of course, making 21 three-pointers, they can hit as many two-pointers at the rim as they want if the Heat are getting 21 threes, but That said, Hassan Whiteside in the second half really got going, and kind of the start of everything, what initiated Whiteside bringing that energy. In the third quarter, Cody Zeller did something to piss him off.
Well, they were going after a rebound,
right.
And then Zeller, being the physical player that he is, started crowding Whiteside a little bit, tried reaching in there, I think after he had been already called for a foul and it was Miami's ball. But I guess Zeller was kind of trying to, instigate things a little bit, harass him, kind of hurry him up, and Whiteside was holding onto the ball a little too much. Whiteside took exception to that and then flung back a huge right arm, nearly catching Kid Gilchrist across the chin. But Kid Gilchrist kind of flew back to avoid the elbow. And at that point in time, Zeller kind of stepped up to try and intimidate Whiteside a little bit. Tempers flared. It looked like there was going to be an argument of some kind. Kaminsky stood up off the bench, and referees had to get involved. A technical foul was assessed to Whiteside for throwing the elbow, and a personal foul was assessed to Zeller, and rightfully so. But that did seem to kind of inspire him, because from that point forward, he went on, scored the next 6 points. He just seemed much more engaged. He was active and just looking to get more shots and finished up with 8 points, 11 rebounds, and 3 blocks. So, I mean, an angry Whiteside is a much better Whiteside, apparently. It's good to see, because I think you and I have always worried, mm-hmm. We never questioned his talent or his ability. And if you're going to question his emotional stability at times, you wonder whether or not he's going to be able to harness it. But we saw him take that anger and utilize it very effectively. We didn't think he was capable of that maybe last season or the year before that when he was first coming into the league. But this was an incident where he kind of got pissed off and really was able to say, you know what, I need to do what I can to intimidate this team, impose my will, so to speak. And it was really effective in the second half.
Yeah, I mean, that second half was so – Whiteside coming to life in the second half was really what won the Heat the game. Because they had hit something – what was it, 11 three-pointers in the first half?
Yeah.
And Charlotte still had the lead going into the halftime.
Right.
It was – so – that and that was really because Whiteside – and that's – Dragic was having such a great game and everything like that. And it was just like – I was thinking in the first half, if Whiteside was just playing like an average game, the Heat would be blowing this game out right now. But because
the Jermaine O'Neal factor, right?
Exactly. Just be average, please.
Yeah. Just get your 5 points per game, and we can win a series.
Right.
Never mind.
But Whiteside, he didn't even come. It wasn't like he got a talking to at halftime either that got him inspired and ready to go. He really needs Zeller getting into his face to get going. I don't know if the Heat need to go sign a guy to just piss Whiteside off whenever they need him. I don't know if Haslam could just be that guy because he's also like his mentor. So maybe you just need like a Lance Stevenson type player, not Lance Stevenson, but a Lance Stevenson type who you sign for the minimum and you just
he all his whole job is just to piss Whiteside off. Maybe that's what you do. I don't know. But
as an aside, I'm really disappointed to see Lance Stephenson back with the Pacers. I know basketball Twitter, I know this has nothing to do with anything, but basketball Twitter is all about Stephenson and his return and everything else, the prodigal son, et cetera, et cetera.
This has to blow, I'm not against it because it can't end well, right? This can't end well. It's not like Lance Stephenson's all of a sudden going to be back at elite perimeter defender, you know, crunch time scorer. Like, he's just not good at basketball anymore. He's not going to just suddenly be good because he's in Indiana. What's going to be funny is when he just pisses Paul George off and he's like, Paul George is like, wait, I wanted to be a contender and you got me Lance Stephenson back? No, I'm out. I'm going. And then Indiana's left with nothing but Lance Stephenson.
Let's hope that's the case. Anyway, sorry to digress
no,
there.
That's fine. We're done talking about this game. I mean, Dragic, I don't even know if we read his stat line. 33 points, 13-21 shooting, 4 assists. Aggressive from the start. Scored my 8 of Miami's first 10 points. Really set the tone. Look, yeah. And that's what it's going to take. Games like that from Dragic, games like this from James Johnson. Better game, like more consistency from Whiteside. Look, 4 games left, right? Miami plays Toronto in a couple of days. And the Hornets one we said was a must win.
It was.
They've got to win this Raptors or Cleveland game coming up, and then they've got 2 games against the Wizards. They have to split that. That would give them a 3-2 record in the final 5 games, and we think that that should be good enough to make the playoffs. So the Raptors on Friday, and hey, the Heat. This is one way to start off that this 5-game series that we're talking about.
Yeah, fun start to what's going to be an interesting end. You know, we talked about that in detail yesterday. You know, we both also accurately predicted that we'd need big gains from Dragic and Richardson respectively, and we certainly got that. Mm-hmm. A combined 9 of 16 shooting from behind the line, 33 points for Dragic, as you said, 19 for Richardson. So he stepped up. I mean, I think that was pretty big. You saw him. I think at one point, I want to say it was James Johnson drove into the lane, kicked it out to Richardson, and there was no hesitation there from the right elbow. He just rose up and shot and knocked down a 3-pointer. He looked really comfortable doing so, and that's what you need. Look, he also had 6 rebounds, 5 assists.
Led the team in assists.
Yeah, best overall.
About his 3-point shooting, there was one play actually where the Heat got a defensive rebound, and they were kind of moving, or maybe it was a loose ball. They recovered. You know what I'm talking about? Richardson brings the ball down. And he has a wide open 3 in transition, but instead it's like towards the end of the fourth quarter.
Miami it was
like a 10 plus 12 point.
Killing the clock. He was killing the clock.
Killed the clock. And I was like, is he just killing the clock as an excuse because he's hesitant to shoot this thing? But then he finds Tyler Johnson with a perfectly timed pass. And Tyler Johnson steps right into a 3-pointer and nails it. And it was like, no, that was he was actually just making the right basketball play. So I was
very
like relieved there for a second. Yeah. And then I think on the next play was the one you just talked about James Johnson kicking it out to him, and he took the 3 and he made it, and it was just like, all right, this guy's going.
Yeah. So yeah, it was a really good game. So that's what we need, obviously, moving forward and hopefully moving into the playoffs as well.
All right. Well, for now, that's all we have for today. Whether you're listening on iTunes, Google Play, or Stitcher, thank you for listening. Get in touch with the show on Twitter at Locked On Heat or by email, where you can send us mailbag questions, comments, or sponsorship. We got a bunch of mailbag questions already. This next mailbag is going to be a good one. That's lockedonheat@gmail.com where you can send all that stuff. If you're not subscribed to the podcast already, please do so to get the podcast automatically every day. Then go to iTunes, rate us, and review us. I actually checked our iTunes reviews right before we started recording. Got a couple of new ones. Really appreciate it, guys, that are going on iTunes and leaving us those 5-star reviews. It really means a lot to us. Anyway, that's all we have. We'll catch you next time. Thanks for joining me, David.
You got it, Wes.
It takes a lot to get excited about a bag, but most bags can't save you 20% on auto parts. That's 20% off headlamps, 20% off oil filters, 20% off virtually anything you can fit inside the 99-cent Napa reusable bag. So tell your buddies, there's a bag they just have to check out. Quality parts, helpful people. That's Napa know-how. Napa know-how. At participating Napa Auto Parts stores while supplies last. Minimum 3 items. Exclusions apply. Offer ends 10/31/17.